The Financial Survival Network, helping you to survive and thrive in the new economy. Get our complimentary newsletter at financialsurvivalnetwork.com. This is the Financial Survival Network.
Financial Survival Network is presented to you by Regal Assets. Buy and sell physical gold and silver through your existing retirement plan 100% tax-free with Regal Assets. If you want to include physical gold or silver in your existing IRA or old 401k, request your free investment kit, which was recently featured in the Forbes and Smart Money Wall Street Journal magazines. Call toll-free 855-678-6620, 855-678-6620, or visit regalassets.com.
We like to look back every month, see what's happened, see where things potentially are going, and there's nobody better to do that with than Mickey Fulp, the mercenary geologist of mercenarygeologist.com. He's with us now. How you doing, Mickey?
I'm doing very well, Kerry. I'm in St. Louis, and it's been a very good month for the markets and a very good month for my St. Louis Cardinals. We have clinched a tie for the National League wild card, and one game magic number with two games left to play. So I'm feeling pretty good.
And you've been seeing a lot of those games up close and personal, haven't you?
Well, I saw games over the last couple of weeks in Chicago, saw the Cardinals play there, and then I saw the Yankees pounce Toronto when I was there about a week ago.
Yeah, well, that's fun. Nothing like the roar of a crowd in a real baseball game. But here we are, so St. Louis, and that's your favorite team going to the playoffs. We'll see who else is going to be there with them, right?
Well, it's all determined, I think, now, except for positioning. The Dodgers could tie the Cardinals, and there'd be a one-game playoff. But we expect to take care of that tonight.
Yeah, so, well, that'll be interesting to see. Well, the Dodgers are definitely behind the eight ball on that one, though. But our stock market, particularly the Dow Jones, is way ahead of the eight ball. It's at record highs, five-year record highs, right?
And both the Dow and the S&P 500 hit their highs since December of 07, pre-financial crisis. The NASDAQ has hit its 12-year high since the parabolic fall in October of 2000. The Russell 2000 small markets are participating, hitting a 1.5-year high. Toronto's big board is probably the overall underperformer during this period, but commodities are up. It was up 3% over the month. And the Venture Exchange continues to rally, up 7.5% over the month, but it's still down 10% for 2012. Volumes are a little better, but they are still historically low.
Yeah, so nobody's convinced about the rally in the TSX Venture, are they?
Well, no, I think you're right on that, Kerry, and I'm not convinced either. You know, we had quite a rally in January and February, up something on the order of 12% over those 2 months, and then it came all crashing down March to the beginning of August. Every month was down. We've had somewhat of a rally since then. I think it's up something on the order of about 13% or so since the beginning of August. We expected that. We expected markets to get better after Labor Day. The push of quantitative easing both in the U.S. and Europe has certainly helped the metals quite substantially.
Oh, yeah. So the metals and the stock markets, the same tide lifted both their boats, if you will.
Well, that's true, and that makes sense because fiat currencies devalue dollars. You know, you look at the only thing that did well during the hyperinflation in Zimbabwe was their stock market roared. So the metal prices up anywhere. Gold was probably a bit of an underperformer, up 5%, but it had such big gains at the end of last month, which we talked about on the two quantitative easing measures. The other metals, silver, up almost 9%, platinum 8%, copper was up almost 9%. What we found is that platinum over the last couple of months has outperformed both gold and palladium, and that's to be expected with the ongoing labor strife and difficulties in South Africa, which is the world's largest platinum producer. Concerning copper, we've had somewhat of an inventory shift over the summer with the Shanghai warehouses gaining at the expense of COMEX and the LME, but inventories are still remain very low. In fact, they are at less than 8 days of world demand right now. So whatever's going on in the copper market, it's not always very transparent what goes on in China, but copper's looking very good, trading around the 375 range, 370, 375 now.
Hey, well, I'm thinking, what if those copper warehouses in China are like the steel warehouses where they're cross-collateralized and it kind of looks like the London metals exchange there? So all those warehouses where all this copper is supposedly sitting, what if it's really not there? It went to the same place that the Chinese steel went to. Where is that going to leave us?
Well, Kerry, that can't happen. These are bonded warehouses. There's a lot of copper that's not accounted for. But in the bonded warehouses on Shanghai, COMEX, and LME, that's audited and inventoried. So I don't think you see that sort of thing in a copper market, other than the fact there's lots of pig farmers and speculators that hoard copper in China. And I dare say there's probably people in other parts of the world with unofficial hoards of copper.
Yeah. I just wonder, not so much the bonded warehouses, because like you say, they're pretty tight there and it'd be really difficult to pull off a fraud. But there are private hoards and private companies in China that I'm willing to bet have similar collateral issues as the steel companies.
There's no doubt about that. And that's the reason I was referring previously to the opacity of what goes on in the copper market in China.
Yeah, that's a nice way of putting it. So, and then we go on to energy, which was pretty much the loser for the month.
Well, both WTI and Brent were down for the month. But I think everyone's comfortable at these levels with a close of $92 for WTI, $1.13 for Brent. Gas is still mucking around at $3 and a million BTU, although it was up almost 12% over the month. Here's an interesting tidbit, and someone pointed this out to me. It's pretty obvious what's going on in the Eastern Hemisphere. Kerry, we speak a lot about the WTI to gas ratio, and energy-wise, it should be 6-1. At the end of this month, it was at 30-1. The Russians sell their gas at 6-1 energy ratio. Were you aware of that?
We
probably were aware of that. We just didn't think about it that way.
Yeah, because they're getting $15.
$15 to $17, depending on where they're selling it. Mm-hmm. Europe is about $15. To Asia, it's about $17.
Sure.
Eastern Asia. So do the math on that. So here again, the Russians, who are not under constraints of the market as we know it, are still getting premiums for their gas. We're landlocked. We've discussed this ad infinitum or ad nauseum, however you want to look at it. So we don't need to go into that. The big loser for the month was uranium. I was completely baffled and wrong on this, as I predicted an upturn in the spot price with the World Nuclear Association meeting in London this month. Uranium's down 10% on the year on the spot price. But interestingly enough, the term price has been flat all year at about $60. So what we're seeing is a shift back to longer-term contracts. Starting with the speculation in the uranium sector in 2006, increasingly we saw more and more sales on the spot market. It appears post Fukushima, year and a half past Fukushima, that utilities especially are going to longer term or secure contracts. The Chinese and other sovereign governments certainly appear to be doing that at the expense of the spot market. There's also, I wouldn't say rumors, but it occurs to me and some other people who follow the uranium sector, which again is fairly opaque, that with 48 of 50 functionable nuclear reactors in Japan offline right now, do the math, that's probably about something on the order of 11 or 12% of world demand. We're just using something like 435 reactors. 50 of those are in Japan, 48 are offline. That would account for something at plus 10% lessening in demand. But the feeling is that perhaps the Japanese are, the Japanese utilities are selling inventories into the spot market, or trying to sell inventories one way or the other. And perhaps that's what is contributing to the depressed spot price now trading at about somewhere around $47 a pound.
Wow. So that would mean that effectively Japan's never, is planning to never reopen those nuclear power plants, you think?
Well, that's to be determined. It came out this week that they've issued some rules. Their nuclear regulatory agency, whatever it's called, has basically initiated new safety tests, and it now appears that reactors, that those regulations will not even be promulgated for a while, and no reactors are likely to come online until mid-2013, so that's another delay. But, of course, that's taken up by other emerging countries in the world. They're very committed to nuclear, and there's a whole list of those that we can go over at some time.
Oh, sure.
In another show.
Yeah, but it's just interesting to me, the cost to the Japanese economy of keeping all those power plants offline is huge. I heard something like $350 billion per year, $30 billion a month. So I guess politically they just can't do it.
Yeah, well, they're replacing it with LNG at $17 a million BTUs. And another thing that's probably depressing the spot uranium price has been speculated anyway is cheap natural gas. So we're seeing power plants converted to natural gas, especially in North America, and that's thought to be part of the reason too. I'm not sure I buy that, but I've read that lately.
Well, I'm going to postulate something to you about the behavior of markets, and agree or disagree with me, but I'm going to point to platinum, its behavior of lagging so far behind gold, almost unheard of discount. You and I know five times since World War II has the cost of platinum dipped below gold. And what happens? Out of the blue, maybe not out of the blue, in South Africa, there's major labor disruptions, there's killings of miners taking place, and all of a sudden, platinum, out of nowhere, nobody expecting it, shoots up faster than anything else. I would aver, and I would make the argument that natural gas selling at $17 in Asia and $15 in Europe will somehow come to the U.S., somehow spur something that we are not expecting in the market and cause what is an extremely undervalued situation, like you said, 6-to-1, just from a physics standpoint of energy. We will see the price of natural gas righted at some point in the near future. I don't know why it's going to happen. I don't know when it's going to happen, but I believe that markets have some type of force that when something is trading at way below its intrinsic value, the market will find a way to bring that item up to its, close to its intrinsic value, or perhaps even over its intrinsic value to make up for the discount it was selling at. You could agree or disagree. It's just a theory of mine.
Well, I'm a supply-demand fundamentalist, and we know that the cure for low price is in low prices and vice versa. So your point's well taken there, Gary.
Hey, I totally agree with you on that. But I think something freaky will happen that we weren't expecting in natural gas that's going to drive it back up to where it's profitable again. I don't know if it'll be this year, next year. Maybe we'll have another ice age. I don't know what's going to happen, but I do know that those prices are way too cheap on any basic analysis, and not so much cheap in that, me, I'm a Con Ed customer. My prices haven't gone down, but they haven't gone up for natural gas, but cheap from a relative standpoint to the rest of the world, what they're paying, and cheap from a relative standpoint to petroleum-based energy, which, what did you say? It was a 30 times? I think you said 30 times.
Is the current ratio of WTI to Henry Hub gas.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see because I just think that markets always figure these things out long before people that watch the markets have a clue. But this remains to be seen. Okay, Mick, so I think we got a good idea of where the markets started the month and where they wound up at the end of September. So we will talk to you about it next month, and we'll see what's what then.
And we will, and October is oftentimes a very interesting month in the market. So I look forward to speaking to you about this subject in a month.
All right. We will talk to you then. And with the geopolitical events that are taking place now, nobody can reasonably make any predictions as to where the prices are going to be.
I'll agree with that.